Well, hello there. I'm Adrian Eames. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. As ever, James O'Toole is with us. James, how is your world?
Oh, it's going very well at the moment, Adrian. We had a busy week, obviously, with the Club World Cup going on. So I was all over that this week. But it was a good week to watch some live football as well.
Yeah. What did you make of the World Club Cup Bayern Munich champions?
Do you know, it was a very good, it was more entertaining than I thought it was going to be, I must be said. But the teams went at each other. Tigres were very, very good in the final. They kind of kept it tight enough until that goal, given the foot, and of all people, Sausalito, the centre-half, it's his foot that keeps him onside. And he'd had a great campaign as well for Tigres during the whole tournament. It seemed to go well. The only down point really for the tournament is Müller contracting COVID while he was there, so then not playing in the final. So that was a bit odd, considering they're all in their bubbles.
Also with us on the podcast this week, Paul Corrie, a regular on the podcast. Your world, Paul, discuss. Is it filled with thrills and spills and dashing to the Rignan, or are you at home?
I'm very much at home. I've started a new job with a tech company, Adrian, so I've been absolutely up to my eyes with that. And then on weekends, I guess, filling as many football matches in as I can, and sometimes I'm ODing on it, but I guess outside of that, there's not too much that we can do. But taking it day by day, week by week, and hopefully we're that bit closer to towards normality.
Yeah, and when you got this job with the unnamed tech company, did it help in your CV to say, I'm a regular pundit, I'm a former Sheffield Wednesday, UCD, Shamrock Rovers player? Was your sporting pedigree part of the process?
Yeah, there's certain there's probably certain transferable skills that, if you know how to articulate them, are very relevant to the workplace. And you know, you're talking about your goals, working towards goals, working within teams and whatnot. And I put you down as one of my references, Adrian. I thought, given the relationship we've built up on this podcast, you might have good things to say about me.
They never contacted me, oddly enough. Talk about your transferable
either.
Skills.
You aren't there, James. Myself and Adrian have a stronger bond that it links back to being on the same flight out to Munich for a stag do one year that I thought he was almost going to join us at one point. So there's probably a bit of a deeper relationship. But maybe for the next one, James, I might knock you down.
This is all going down a very peculiar route, lads. Let's move on. football and Gaelic games. James, a lot of division, I guess, this week when the government announced that they were changing the status of, you know, Gaelic games, of Gaelic football, of hurling, of camogie to non-elite in the context of COVID-19 restrictions. Some in the Gaelic games community were looking at the League of Ireland and the start date at the 19th of March, and they were raising their eyebrows saying, well, if football in Ireland can start, if League of Ireland can be played, why can't Gaelic games be played? And then you got the predictable stuff toing and froing on social media. What did you make of all that? I mean, obviously, this is a football podcast, but the GA people who are unhappy that League of Ireland is going ahead and that their sport isn't.
Yeah, you can kind of understand where they're coming from, because how many children do you know? Like, for instance, my children are all in either a nursery or are playing football at the minute for Castleknock. So you can understand where that kind of, why are they allowed back to do this kind of and play? And there's so many kids and so many young adults who are missing out on it through minors and stuff like that. But I suppose the way to look at it, if the only way you're going to get the GAA as an elite is at the top level into county stuff, club level, you can't guarantee pods, you can't guarantee people coming out in and out of squads and stuff like that. So I think that's probably what it's more based on, more than going for elite versus non-elite, if you know what I mean. I think the controls within the League of Ireland, because they're smaller groups, the smaller backroom, like, for instance, if you take the Dublin backroom staff alone, they'd outnumber what would be a squad and backroom managers within the League of Ireland almost. So I think the numbers around the League of Ireland is probably what got it into its elite status compared to the numbers that are involved within a GAA setup.
I'll give you a quote, Paul. I mean, you would have heard, I'm sure, a lot of the comments and read a lot of the comments on social media, but the Clare football manager, Colm Collins, saying safety is important, but I think it's kind of hilarious to be calling League of Ireland elite sport and the Dubs not elite sport. It beggars belief that teams like the Limerick Hurlers and the football winners like Dublin are not considered elite, and a Division 2 soccer team is considered elite. I mean, teams that will have 82,000 customers paying to see them as opposed to, what, a handful. Oh, man, that's unbelievable. That's the quote from the Irish Independent this week. What's your take on this?
Yeah, you would feel for the GAA lads, you know, particularly if you start being close to home with the Dubs. Like, the Dubs are up there with probably being the most professional outfit that we have in this country. And you just look at, I guess, how they're drilled and even the shape they're in. You know, that is an elite athlete right there. And it is hard to distinguish between the two. And you would have to feel for them that they are not being allowed to resume, whereas the League of Ireland is. And then James has probably got a fair point there in regards to keeping the numbers down in the pods. It seems a bit unfair that it's one rule for the League of Ireland and another for the GAA when people train just as hard and get themselves into peak condition to compete at a high level. And it's hard to compare one against the other. And, you know, if you're sitting back as a GAA fan, you're going to feel very hard done by that they're not going to be able to resume. And, you know, I don't think it's right for the GAA people to be taking pops at the League of Ireland or vice versa, and the League of Ireland taking pops back at the GAA. The ruling seems a bit unfair, but I guess from a football fan point of view, I guess we're probably just lucky that it's going back, and hopefully, you know, cases stay down, people respect the rules that are put in place, and we're not seeing any spread from the resumption of the league, and hopefully from there, maybe that might stem back into getting the GAA and other sports back up and running.
And I guess as well, James, key to it, unquestionably key to it, is that players in the League of Ireland, whatever people who are not involved with the League of Ireland might think, you know, they are contracted. It is, for so many, their livelihood here. And as you mentioned last year, they, you know, they operated within the bubble. You know, there were outbreaks of, you know, at a couple of clubs. But that was just the nature of the pandemic. There were issues, there's no question about that. But by and large, you know, football in this country so far, touch wood, and hopefully it continues, but so far it's handled COVID and the pandemic pretty well. Now, we week in, week out, we say on the podcast that, you know, the bigger picture is the more important thing here. And of course it is. But, you know, when you look back over the last year in 2020, I think football in this country did pretty okay.
Yeah, it did. And like Paul said, you don't want to put this, you don't pitch this as GAA versus football. You just don't want to do that. Because at the same time, when we're talking about the League of Ireland in an 18-game season coming out well with a couple of cases, there was an All-Ireland final last year, and there was an All-Ireland final in the women's, there was an All-Ireland final. Do you know, there were several All-Ireland finals last year. So they also managed their way through it as well with bigger squads.
True.
Now, I think that's the whole contract thing may be the grip of where the government might be able to get out on a loophole on it. But if you're looking at loopholeisms all over the place, like Paul's right, like you look at any of those inter-county guys, the amount of work they put in to get into the inter-county setup in the first place and then while they're there is immense. It is as a pro athlete, there's no question. But I just feel it may be a numbers game. And to tell you the truth, this might suit the GAA not going back as quick, because then if they do get into camp and they do start training and playing and do a couple of inter-pros or something like that, further down the line, fans would be allowed back into grounds. And I think that would benefit the GAA as well as the soccer more. But it would benefit the GAA more than it would the soccer.
Okay, all right, lads. Listen, we'll move along, as they say. A couple of other things to touch on. Wes Hoolan, Paul, did you ever play against Wes at any stage?
No.
I
didn't actually come up against him. Norwich were kind of to and fro between the Premier League when I was at Sheffield Wednesday, so didn't have too many trips or too many games against Wes.
Well, the reason I mention him, of course, is that he was named as League Two Player of the Month with Cambridge United. 38 years of age, he's just defying Father Time, isn't he? It's remarkable.
It is, and I guess in one sense, I'm probably not surprised. And the reasoning around that, Adrian, is just like Wes was never about being super athletic or being super quick over 3 or 4 yards. He played the game very much with his brain, and it was his vision and creativity that, I guess, really stood out, particularly for Norwich and also for Ireland. And he never really lost that, and he hadn't really any pace to lose, and he wasn't going to get any slower. I can empathise with him in that. And for that reason, you're probably not too surprised, because his game hasn't had to adapt. You know, you see pacey wingers or a pacey centre forward, and as they start to lose those few yards, they have to adapt their game, and they're maybe not as impactful. Wes is a different case altogether. What you do have to give him credit for is, and he probably doesn't get the credit for it, is he's actually in really good condition. Like, he's super, super lean, and you can tell that he's looked after his body. And he's probably managed to steer clear of any serious injuries the older he's pushed on. But to be doing it at 38, and within a League Two club, like, it's not an easy league. It's super physical. I've been there. It's a lot of the ball can be in the air, and he needs it down to feet. So he's obviously managed to make a major impact into Cambridge. I think he's 2 years younger than him, or 2 years older than the manager, and that will give you some perspective. But the fact that he's still doing it, and the fact that he still has the hunger to do it, is just a credit to him and the career that he's had. So, is it too late to call him back up? Probably. He's probably a little too slow, but the impact that he's having in League Two with Cambridge at the moment is incredible.
I'd say he could still do a job for the country, no doubt about it. When you say League Two, having played there, is super physical, is it more physical than, say, the League of Ireland?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I don't care what anybody says. Nobody can. You can't compare the two. I remember, like, just to give you a really simple example, centre halves in League Two, they're all 6'3", 6'4". And they're just the build of them. Like, they'll head and kick anything. And I don't think we have the mould of that centre half. It's probably a bit of a Brian Gartland build, whereby they're just super, super physical. And I don't think you see too many of them in the League of Ireland. And I think for that reason, it is that bit more physical than, say, a League of Ireland centre half. And because of that, they're probably not as technical with their feet, so it becomes a bit more of a battle. And I guess that for Wes is that's probably going to prove a little difficult to get involved in games when it does get that bit scrappier, particularly at this time of year when the pitches tend to cut up.
Yeah, James, there are probably one or two clubs, at the latter end of his career that's still going on, but a couple of clubs in Ireland that were perhaps hoping that Wes Hoolan might return home and weave his magic.
Yeah, you would think they would have, but I'm just looking back in his stats. Like, he's paid 512 professional appearances in his time, and this league, this season alone, 23 appearances for Cambridge in League Two and the FA Cup and the EFL. And Paul's right. Like, when you said, the only way we can see how these players are is in my favourite competition, Adrian, the FA Cup, when you see them up against the top teams. But even still, the centre halves, as Paul said, are absolute monsters. So he's the lad that's played since, I think, was it 2007 or 2005, maybe, in England. And he's just gone from strength to strength. And his ability to keep himself fit and keep himself going as he has, winning that player of the month, is just a credit to him, absolute credit to him. There's not many who would be able to do it, it has to be said.
Well, we're joined on the line by John Mountney of St. Patrick's Athletic. Am I right in thinking, John, you'll be 28 soon, is that right?
Adrian, how are you? Yeah, 28 next week.
So you'll have another 10 years or so to catch Wes. How are you feeling at heading into your 28th year in terms of League of Ireland football? Could you see yourself doing a bit of a Wes-o and still be playing at 38?
Yeah, hearing you talk about Wes, it's a credit to him, isn't it, to play at that level at that age. And like Paul touched on, the condition he's kept himself in. I suppose anything after 30, you'd think when you're younger, is a plus. But the way football is now, it seems you can, with the sports science behind it, you can really push your body them extra few years. So I'd be hoping to do that myself.
So you've an appetite. You just love playing football, obviously, and you'd be hoping to play as long as you can. You know how some lads often say, well, when I reach 31, 32, that's it, I'm getting out. But you're just going to play on as long as you can, by the sounds of things.
I think so, yeah. It's hard to put your thumb on it, and I don't think you can put an age on it. I think, like you said, it's keep playing, and once you have that hunger and you're still able to, and of course, as times change, if you can adapt to different positions that might suit you if your fitness goes down or if your speed or different stuff like that. But of course, I suppose any footballer who loves playing wants to maximise their career.
We'll come on to St. Pat's and, you know, what the future holds. But can I just go back a few years, you know, because obviously people will know from your Dundalk days what you've achieved. But before that, you're from Bohola. So how did that come about, you know, the move from, say, playing, you know, football, junior football in Mayo to joining Dundalk?
Well, I suppose, Adrian, I was, you know, growing up around Mayo, like everyone knows, it's mainly a GAA area, but I always had a love for football myself, and I was trying to pursue that. And being a young lad going over and back to England didn't work out. So the next thing was, how do I get into a team in the League of Ireland? So I was lucky enough that opportunity came under Johnny Glynn when I was 17 from Irvine United. And lucky enough then, Sean McCaffrey, who was the Irish underage manager at the time, brought me to Dundalk in 2012, and that's where I got my opportunity.
And which clubs were you at in England?
There was a few at the time. There was the likes of Everton, Charlton, Burnley, clubs like that, but it just didn't work out. So I had to put that, like a lot of lads, you have to put that disappointment aside and just try and get your foot in the door somewhere.
And the late Sean McCaffrey, as you say, brought you to Dundalk. When you signed for Dundalk, and obviously the success that followed under Stephen Kenny and, you know, Vinnie Perth and Filippo with the cup just a few months ago. But when you signed initially, could you have ever have imagined the success that was about to unfold for you?
No, definitely not, Adrian, at the time, because, you know, moving up to Dundalk, I was 18 years of age, and it was just about playing and getting experience. And, you know, obviously it was a relegation battle that year, but it was just brilliant being that age and playing every weekend under a manager who believed in you. And, you know, he was great for the young lads, Sean was, because he was always encouraging lads to work extra on their technique and to keep improving and go places. But no, after that first year, we definitely couldn't imagine the success that was to follow.
Yeah, I don't know, it was absolutely terrific. If you're to pick out, is there any particular highlight that you'd say, oh, that was the moment, or, you know, from all your years with Dundalk, is there any one, or is every one of them special? All the medals.
Yeah, it's hard, even because we got used of winning things, obviously, with Dundalk, and we were so lucky. We had, you know, it was a great club and great manager at the time and staff, and it was a great group of players. It was like a family environment. So, you know, we were all lucky to experience the success together. But I think the first league title in Oriel Park, you know, beating Cork, I think it was when Stephen O'Donnell and Brian Gartland scored that game to win at the last game of the season. That was an incredible experience. And then a couple of years later, qualifying for the Europa League group stages, beating Bate and Tala was unforgettable too.
Yeah, John, I'm going to bring you back a bit, because I actually remember being at your debut for Dundalk against Monaghan in the FA Cup under Sean, actually. Sean was the manager that time. But it's mad to think that since that day, like, that was 2012, and you made 200 league appearances with 20 goals. So you obviously love the zeros after the twos. Could you imagine, like, when you look back at the game in Waterford in particular, was a poor game, poor season, finished luckily with a win in Waterford. And to see yourself and Shields being the only ones that really carried on from there, it was a great sign that Stephen seen two players in that squad that he wanted to keep.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think there was a few of us from 2012, Stephen had kept on, and there was some very talented players. You know, there was Mark Griffin, who was coming through and he had a spark. And then Michael Rafter, who was excellent that year for us and scored the two goals in Waterford. And there was a few good players in that team. And myself and Chris were lucky enough. And obviously the uncertainty of the league, there was never secure contracts. It was just year after year. And sort of, you know, if you were doing well and Stephen wanted to keep you, we were lucky enough to be kept on over the years.
First and foremost, from my point of view, I can't believe John Mountney's only 27. I'm still in shock here, and I know that's a credit to you, John, because within sport, and particularly within football, it's very difficult to stay relevant for that period of time. But what you've done is you've managed to stay relevant and successful, and that's a serious achievement to yourself. I'm just going to ask, you know, sometimes changing things up and moving on and freshening up your environment and your club is often a bonus and a positive. Have you found that since you've joined Pats? Not that there was anything wrong at Dundalk, but do you feel that, you know, there's a new, I guess, profound energy within yourself being in a different environment and taking up a different role in a new dressing room?
Yeah, definitely, Paul. I think you know, 9 years having been here, and I'm living in Dundalk as well still. I got a house a couple of years ago, so I have a real attachment to the place. And, you know, I knew it was never going to be easy the day I'd have to go. But, you know, I was very confident when I'd spoken to Stephen O'Donnell at St. Pat's, and, you know, having played with him and knowing the type of person he is and what he wants to do at St. Pat's, it was a perfect opportunity for me. And like you said, you know, I never thought twice about it when the opportunity came to go to Pat's. And, you know, even driving up the first few days, I knew straight away it was the right thing. You know, all new voices and the management they have up there with Stephen O'Donnell and Patrick Craig and Seanie O'Connor, and then the players as well. Haven't seen a lot of them over the years, and now after playing with them, yeah, it's really refreshing and something that really excites me.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, how excited are you about the prospect of playing under Stephen O'Donnell, your old teammate at St. Pat's? Because I think even by his own admission, probably last season, Pat's underachieved really, I suppose, largely over the course of the season. Inconsistency was the issue there. But in 2021, with, you know, the likes of yourself coming in and Robbie Benson with another season behind him, and there's other, you know, new signings, a new goalkeeper has arrived as well. Are you optimistic about the 2021 campaign for St. Pat's?
Yeah, definitely, Adrian. You know, like I said, I have the group that's already there. There's lads I played against in the league, and there was lads before going up who I rated highly. And, you know, after playing with them, you know, I still have the same opinion. There's some very good players up there. And even the young lads coming through, you know, there's a good few young lads in with us that have won the under-15s League of Ireland, under-17s and under-19s League. So there's some great talent coming through there as well. You know, and there's definitely that hunger in the place for success.
Yeah. And are you optimistic as well about the season? Because it's probably an impossible question to answer because we simply don't know with the COVID numbers how things are going to go. But as it stands, we're on course for a March 19th start. But, you know, you're all back in now, getting up to, you know, match sharpness.
Yeah, exactly. We've been in a couple of weeks now. And so it was such a relief for us getting back as well because, you know, like everyone being in a lockdown and being out of work, it's so tough for everyone, you know, physically and mentally. And you know, being back in with a group of lads in the football environment and you know, working for a purpose, you know, to get back into the league and you know, it gives you a real excitement and a real bounce in your step to be back. You know, and please God, the dates will stay as they are, and we can get back. And obviously, you know, everyone knows as well. The sooner people can start coming in the gates to watch the games, the better it is for everyone too.
John, we've mentioned this over the last couple of weeks of the amount of people leaving Dundalk in the off season. Usually, when you leave Dundalk, it's a bit odd going back to play against fellas you've played for over the years. But this year, you're going to go to Drogheda and see players you've played against for years, and Shamrock Rovers as well. So, how do you adjust to that kind of thing? And are you looking forward to getting on a pitch and taking on fellas that you would have been training with for the last number of years?
Yeah, like you said, there's lads that have left to a few different clubs, so of course it's going to be different. But you know, we've. A lot of us have played with each other for many of years, so we've good relationships. But, you know, once you go on the pitch, you forget about that and you know, you're focused on of course trying to beat them. So you know, there'll be no friends once we step on the pitch. I'm sure everyone is a competitive group of lads that left. So, you know, I think everyone will be in the same boat.
Do you find your position, John, in the dressing room changing at all now that you're, I guess, not pushing on, but you're that bit more mature and people are obviously gonna turn to you as being somebody who's been successful within the league? Do you find that you're kind of coming into a new culture and you really want to drive that forward, or what's your style? Are you one to set your example on the pitch, or do you find yourself being one of those leaders now in at St. Pat's?
Yeah, well, there's different types of leaders, as you know yourself, Paul, and obviously being in the football dressing room, there's lads that, you know, that like to speak, and there's lads that lead by example. You know, and some lads don't open their mouth and lead by example on match night by performing, but... So the funny thing was, when I first came to Dundalk, it was Sean McCarthy who used to go, you know, have a pop at me because he said, "You're like a church mouse on the pitch." And, you know, that's just being a country lad coming up at a young age. And, you know, that was never my thing of being vocal. But having been here at Dundalk for 9 years and played with some great leaders on and off the pitch and you know, seeing different types of leaderships, that's definitely something that... You know, I'd like to think I've added to my game now at this stage, and you know, help the team, of course, but also help other, you know, other young lads coming through as well.
Mm. And when you mention, John, leadership, I guess it's not all about just shouting and ranting and raving in the dressing room or on the pitch. You know, there's a lot more to leadership than just that. So how do you see your role in terms of leadership? What qualities, you know, this is like a question for Paul Curry now in terms of his job interviews, but, you know, what qualities would you bring to the leadership role in the Pats dressing room?
Well, you know, but after coming up, there's already some like I said, there's some experienced lads in the league that, you know, have different qualities of leadership. And, you know, myself personally, I like to look after myself off the pitch and, you know, do everything you can to put yourself in the best position. So, you know, you can always hold your head up high after a game, knowing you've done everything you can that week. You know, you've vet right, you've trained right in the gym, you've left nothing on the pitch. You know, so off the pitch, obviously, that's something that, you know, I think is important to work hard and for others to see. And of course, you know, if you can see things on the pitch, depending on what position you're in, you're going to see different things throughout the game. And, you know, if you can see that as it's happening and, you know, be vocal in that situation, it's always helpful too. Yeah.
And in terms of Dundalk, it's a given that competition for places was very, very intense. So you played in a number of positions, you know, right back, midfield, right side of midfield, an attacking winger. But would you see yourself, you know, your preferred position being an out-and-out right winger, raiding up and down?
Yeah, it's a hard one to put my thumb on, Adrian, because, like you said, I've played in a lot of different positions. So, you know, sometimes it's a blessing and sometimes it's a curse because, you know, I like the fact of being versatile and it doesn't faze me whatever position. Once I can help the team, I don't mind where I'm playing. But at the same time, you know, if you're in and out of different positions, you can always be the easy target then when to be pulled out if for different reasons. But you know, that's the position I've learned to play in as a right winger. And then last year when Philippe Oak took over Dundalk, he played with wing back, so it was myself and Sean Gannon swapping and changing with the right wing back role. So yeah, I suppose anywhere along that right side or central, I feel comfortable.
So feeling comfortable on the right hand side, but which one player do you not like playing against?
It's you know, it's hard to say. I think personally, left back in the league over the years has been a very strong position, and you know, two of the lads that are at Pats, you know, well, firstly, I was lucky enough to play. I was playing with Dane Massey rather than against them. You know, and we always had great battles in training, but I always rated Ian Birmingham and Shane Griffin as well from his time at Cork. Used to be good battles against them too. So I'm glad to be playing with them now rather than against them.
The right answer there by including Ian Birmingham for sure. Am I right, John? 5 Premier Division titles with Dundalk, 3 cups, 3 League cups. Would that be right?
Yeah. We had there was huge success, Adrian. But it's funny because, you know, your real push is always is to win things, and lucky that was the environment I was in. But you know, it doesn't last long either when you win a league or if you win a cup. You know, it doesn't take long for the next season to come around, and you'll always have that sort of hunger and motivation to, you know, to achieve again. So it'll be no different this year.
Yeah, but it means that you must be one of the most successful Mayo sports people. Seriously. You know, down through the years. Yeah. I mean, there's not many Mayo lads that have won as much as that, in terms of football, certainly.
I can't think of any off the top of my head, to tell you the truth. No, taken. Oh, God. You'd have to look towards, well, there's old club in Ballina, but maybe someone, Westport as well, produced a couple of good players over the years. But I can't think of anybody who would have that kind of trophy cabinet.
No, absolutely not.
There was a lot of talented footballers from Mayo that have gone away in a good careers, but obviously I was just fortunate and lucky enough to be in the right place at the right time and have a good career with Dundalk.
Yeah, and when you go home, I mean, are people well aware of what you've achieved?
Yeah, I think Mayo was massively supportive of any sports person. So, you know, my village itself, Behole, is only small, but whenever I do get down home, we have the local pub in the village, so whenever I am home or behind the bar helping out, there's, you know, everyone's always in and congratulating you or wanted to talk football. And so, you know, it's always a nice touch about home. Everyone encourages anyone that's in any sports.
Oh, go away. So the famous song, Three Pubs in
Behola. The pub.
Yeah, that's ours.
Give me the lyrics from the song, John.
Yeah, that's our pub, the middle one, the village inn. It used to be in the song, that song you're on about, it was called Roaches.
Ah.
Yeah.
And you still have it? The family still has it?
We obviously not open now, but we do, yeah. We have it. My mom, she took it over. She's had it over 25 years now, and we've just run it as a family business, and she's still kept it going.
I'm going to give it to James to give us a verse or two of Three Pubs in Bohola.
No, you're okay. The voice isn't up to it now. I'm just wondering, is where Paul Curry could have gone there for his stag, Adrian? You would have met him on the plane then.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't know that.
There was actually an interesting article in the paper there. Whether it was true or not, I don't know. Saying one time when Paul Gascoigne and I forgot what team he was at the time, were over in Ireland playing a few games, that they made an excuse of going on a fishing trip to Foxford, just down the road from us, to the River Moy, but ended up having a session in the Three Pubs in Bohola.
You weren't there at the time, were you?
They were over to play Derry.
Was that it? That's right, yeah.
They played Derry in a friendly pre-season. Yeah. So.
And inevitably, John, we have to ask you about, you know, we mentioned the success under Filippo and Vinnie Perth, but Stephen Kenny, of course, the Ireland manager, and we had Dane Massey on the podcast a few weeks ago, and, you know, he was glowing in his admiration for Stephen. But what do you think it is about Stephen Kenny that sets him apart from other managers, maybe?
I just think he has that aura about him. You know, he was... How you know how good he was with dealing with people and player management was the fact that any player who was let go of Dundalk over the years playing under Stephen Kenny would still speak really highly of him, you know, which not many would be able to do about managers that don't offer them new contracts. He just had that it factor about it. I'll never forget one time he took me off in Daly Mount Park at halftime, and... You know, obviously, I felt I was the easy option on the night. It wasn't going our way, and I was young enough at the time. But, you know, I went in to speak to him the next day and was sort of like try to step to him to say why I'm into, you know, I was the easy option and I wasn't having it type of thing. And, you know, it didn't take him long to put me back in my box, you know. And, you know, I didn't know where to look, what to say. You know, I thought I was going in having the say, and it was far from that. And even him being able to do that, he was still able to bring the conversation back around, and I was walking out that door feeling like I was eight feet tall after us not getting a result the night before and being taken off at half time. So he just has something about him, the way he can deal with people and bring out the best in them.
Yeah. And would you be of the belief, because we asked Dane this a few weeks ago as well, would you be of the belief that, you know, he's had a very difficult start as Ireland manager, but would you be confident that he'll turn it around?
Yeah, I'd be confident in him. You know, I think the football Ireland were playing, anyone that's a football fan would be able to see the style of football they were trying to play was definitely more enjoyable. Of course, you know, it's tough. It was tough, all the injuries they were getting and the COVID. So it was just a very tough time for him to take over and having little time with the players he had too. But yeah, I have full faith in him to be successful as the Irish manager, definitely.
Good stuff. I feel I have to ask you, I don't know why, but anyway, the hair. What are we doing with the hair this year? Because for many years, it was long and flowing. You were a bit like Greg Sloggett at one stage. And then you shaved
it. Sloggett took over. Well, like Paul said there, he didn't believe I was only 27. When I was getting the missus to shave the head during all the lockdown. Believe me, I felt 27 plus when I shaved the head. That brings out the true age. I think it's the in thing, isn't it, now, shaving the head? So I'll stick with that for a while anyway.
Good lad. Fair play. Yeah. And listen, just a word on the season ahead with St. Pat's. I mean, inevitably as well, people will be looking at, you know, Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians. Can St. Pat's get into the mix in 2021? Or what do you think is a realistic target?
No, I definitely think so. I've already said a few times about, you know, the group of players that are there and the young lads coming up and the management that are in there, and you know, it's an exciting group, and like I said, it's an ambitious group, and you know, we're not looking just to take part in the league. You know, we're looking to challenge and have a successful year as a club. So you know, I definitely wouldn't rule us out of anything.
Well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck, and many thanks for joining us on the RTÉ Soccer Podcast, John Mountney. Many thanks.
Good stuff. Thanks, lads.
Cheers. Now, that's John Mountney about to set sail at St. Pat's in Inchicore. James O'Toole, a lot of talk in the last week or so about Watch LOI. We asked for a spokesperson from RTE to make themselves available for the podcast, but none was forthcoming. You ever see that on you know, the RTE news? We asked for a spokesperson, but they weren't available. So
there was obviously stuff in the... Me in it then, Aido, are we?
Yeah. Well, you know, on previous podcasts, I would say you're the TV man. So look, I certainly genuinely don't know for sure what the future holds for Watch LOI, but certainly given a lot of the media speculation, it ain't going to be coming back as it was. So what do you reckon?
I'm probably in the exact same position you're in, Adrian. I know that negotiations are ongoing about everything, to tell you the truth, because of the season and the way the season is, TV deals and stuff like that would usually be sorted out by this time of the year, but because of where the season's starting, they're not done yet. I'm sure there's negotiations going on at the minute. It was a bit disappointing when you see the figures that was in Danny McDonald's report during the week of how many people actually took up the season pass, and then how many people took the game by game pass. It was a bit disappointing, but as others have said as well, like if you're going to market this game as a kind of a stream service, empty grounds probably isn't helping to get any enthusiasm behind it. But it cost a lot to do the 18 rounds, so you've bumped that by two up to the full rounds of matches. It's a very, very big cost to stream every game. So I'm taking that's where the number crunchers within RTE and within other sporting organisations as well are looking at.
Yeah. Well, the Irish Independent figures were, you know, that it cost RTE in excess of 300,000. So in terms of the numbers then, again, according to the Independent, 4,700 buyers bought a season pass, which was priced at €55, €69 if you're overseas. The remainder, a figure close to 11,000 of, you know, casual buyers who paid for, you know, select fixtures on a match-by-match basis. You know, the figures, you know, were disappointingly low. You know, that would be the consensus. So it remains to be seen if it'll come back in the format that we saw in 2020. And yet, Paul, you know, people need to see games at this stage. They become accustomed to watching football, be it in England or in Europe, and not to have, you know, matches that are played behind closed doors. You know, the public consumption is there. The community may not be huge in terms of those who want to acquire passes, but for League of Ireland fans who are, you know, diehard fans, you know, the prospect of, you know, Bowes playing behind closed doors or Shamrock Rovers or Sligo Rovers or Cork City or Longford Town, not being able to see it is unthinkable.
We need to have eyes on the games. And, you know, if you go back to, I guess, where we started off and speaking about elite sport, like if we're going to have it resume, surely we're going to have something in place. You know, we're speaking there about figures and people who signed up, but really, if you're going to do it, you need to do it properly. You need to have a proper marketing campaign around it, and you need to do it right. And I don't feel as if that seems to be in place, even with the season starting in what, 5-6 weeks. And everything always feels reactive with the League of Ireland. We never feel like it's proactively at the forefront of people's minds, and that's from the FAI and sometimes the club's responsibility to do that. We can't constantly be relying on the likes of an RTE to burden the cost or, you know, for whoever it might be to come in and support it. We need structure. We need a definitive plan around it. And if we are to resume the league, well, then we need to put some service in place, whether that's coming from the clubs and they're able to generate revenue from that and they're able to charge €5, whatever it is, for viewing of the game or whatever that might be. But it always seems to be the case, Adrian, whether it's funding, whether it's the league startups when we were able to have fans in, everything just always seems to be reactive. And I understand times are tough, finances are not there like they may have been previously with regards to getting people through gates and whatnot, but I always just feel that with the league it's always reactive. I don't ever see any sort of proactive thinking or any sort of proactive campaigns to really push the league forward, and we always just seem to be playing catch up.
James, we have to wait and see what happens. So there may well be a Watch LOI in some shape, but but it would appear not to cover all of the games. Again, that, you know, that's just a view that's out there. That may change. But if Watch LOI or something like Watch LOI isn't going to cover all the games, do you foresee a situation where clubs will be allowed and will be in a position to stream matches themselves and raise capital? Or will that be allowed?
100%. 100%. I can't see them doing anything else bar letting them do it. In fact, I know for a matter of fact that some clubs are already investigating the capital to put into the infrastructure that would allow them to stream their own games, their own home games, and charge a fee for that. If you look at several of the clubs, the way they've based their membership schemes over this season, they've planned without a season ticket, essentially just a membership ticket is the way they're doing it. So they fully expect to have no fans in. Like we spoke to Ali a couple of weeks ago about this with the PFAI and how they're not expecting fans in. If we get towards September, October, maybe we might get some fans in the gates. But yes, I can't, if there is no Watch LOI from the outset, as has been suggested, there is no reason why the FEI would stop clubs going it alone and doing their own product themselves. There can be no financial sense to that.
And in your view, and it is your view, and you know the stuff that I'm saying is just, you know, personal observations as opposed to an RTE view. In your view, James, Watch LOI last year, you know, people could pay 55 for the season pass. You know, it was ridiculously good value. But was it priced too low?
I don't think it was priced too low. I'm sure there was an agreement in place that a certain amount of money
would you as a Derry City fan, you know, knowing that you're going to be able to see all of Derry's home games, home and away, and all the other League of Ireland games, say to yourself, well, I'd pay double that. You know, I'd pay €100. And I know not everybody is, you know, can throw money around willy-nilly, but it seems like very good value.
Yeah, it seems it was very good value. It has to be said. The way I've looked at it, and I mentioned it last year about the costing of it, and how would you judge costing based on this year? Where would your price point be? Where would your unique selling point be as well, considering that leagues all over the world are streaming games? Like, even look at LiveScore on their app are streaming games in Spain and streaming games in Italy for free on their app. So you've got to see where your unique selling point is. And your unique selling point, unfortunately, this season came to 11,000 people. And that, you would take it, would be die-hard League of Ireland fans who have done that. Now, over a season, you can't pitch something like this to be more expensive than a season ticket, for instance. But what you're looking at, and I know it's completely different, it's a different sport, it's a different ballgame, realistically, is people who are paying for Sky Sports, BT Sports, Premier Sports on a package every month are probably paying between, what, 60 and €100 a month for those. So you've got to match it somewhere in there that encourages the people who are watching that. And it has to be below a season ticket price. Right, that's my firm belief on it.
Okay. Final word on this one, Paul. Any other additional thoughts?
I just hope it gets sorted, and I hope there's a good package in place that people can get behind. And you know, we can't forget that this was the first time it was done last season, and people were getting used to it. Of course, you would like to think it's going to be better second time round. I just hope people can come to an agreement of getting something that's going to be professional in place, because I thought it was good last year. Is there room for improvement? Of course there is, but like I mentioned, it was first time out. Getting visibility for fans and generating interest back in the league is vitally important. So I hope something gets sorted in the next couple of days, because I, for one, am looking forward to the season beginning. I would love to have eyes on games, and I'm sure that's the case for many others out there.
Final word to you, James. Joe Hodge joining Derry City on loan from Manchester City. Are you excited about that?
I'm very excited. It's not often that you get a club like Man City letting players go out on loan to the League of Ireland. It's amazing. Now, to tell you the truth, I've only seen him play a couple of games. I remember the under-19s tournament, I think 2 years ago. He was only 16 at the time. and he scored a goal for Ireland, and he seemed really, really good. I'm enthusiastic to see what he's like, and I'm taking the whole idea for Man City is they want to get a player like him out playing first team football, and in a very, very competitive and physical league. How it works out, I have no idea, but it's a great, great signing for Derry City.
Okay, James O'Toole, as ever, many thanks, and Paul Carey as well. From me, Adrian Eames, until next week, bye-bye.